Good morning. Democrats are hoping to win a crucial Senate seat in Maine this November. But days from the primary election, their frontrunner is facing mounting controversies.
If the allegations are true, they are disturbing. End of the day, though, Maine voters are going to decide this.
Elon Musk's rocket company prepares for a blockbuster liftoff on Wall Street. The Atlantic looks at why it matters for your 401k. And Iran and Israel trade strikes for the first time since the April ceasefire. It's Monday, June 8th. I'm Cecilia Lay, in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. He's the favorite to become the Democratic candidate for Maine's all-important Senate race as the party tries to win back a majority in Congress. But now, Graham Plattner is facing a string of misconduct allegations that could cast a shadow over tomorrow's primary election results. The latest came last Thursday. The New York Times published claims by several women who dated Plattner. They said he could be demeaning to women and, in at least one case, was physically threatening. Plattner has acknowledged that he was a, quote, far from perfect boyfriend, but his campaign strongly disputed any claims of physical intimidation. A week earlier, a story emerged that Plattner had exchanged sexual messages with women outside his marriage as recently as last year. His wife described the reports as an invasion of their privacy, and they remain together. He's also faced criticism for old Reddit posts on the subject of women and race, and for getting a tattoo of a Nazi skull. He's denied being aware of its meaning at the time. Last week, Plattner struck a defiant tone at a campaign rally.
When hurtful things I said on the internet a decade ago came out into the public, as I shared my personal journey through PTSD and darkness, of recovery and accountability and growth, Maine had my back. Now, as every single piece of that past and journey gets dug up, litigated, and weaponized, you have my back.
Plattner's rise to presumptive nominee came as a surprise. He's a combat veteran and oyster farmer with no political experience. But his progressive campaign, critical of Democratic leadership, proved popular, so much so that it prompted Democratic Governor Janet Mills to suspend her campaign. Plattner's hoping to unseat Susan Collins, a Republican who has overperformed in the state and occasionally expressed opposition to Trump. Maine is seen as a key battleground if the party is to have any hope of tilting the balance in their favor. On Sunday, Democratic Senator Mark Warner expressed his concerns on Fox, but stopped short of calling on Plattner to go.
If these allegations are true, they're very troubling. But I don't know if they're true or not. I think, frankly, the people of Maine ought to decide that. I guess they'll have a chance on Tuesday.
But other Democrats have stood by him. The progressive Congressman Ro Khanna explained why he was still out campaigning on CBS's Face the Nation.
People in Maine knew that he had had two tours of duty in Iraq. He came back broken in a dark place. That doesn't excuse his behavior, but they knew this. He was in Washington. And then he went back to Maine and he started an oyster farm. He took accountability. He himself has said it was shameful and he had redemption. And now he's running on a platform of national health insurance when Susan Collins is voting to cut it. He's talking about taxing billionaires. Susan Collins is for tax breaks to billionaires. And he's opposed to this foreign war where Susan Collins supported the war in Iran. And that's why I'm still supporting it.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer met with Plattner last week. He had initially endorsed a primary opponent, but said he was backing Plattner's campaign before the Times' most recent story. Wall Street is gearing up for the largest initial public offering in history. Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket company makes its debut this Friday, a move that could reverberate into the markets and potentially your 401k.
They're looking to go public at a roughly a value of $1.77 trillion, which will make it one of the 10 biggest companies in the world.
Mateo Wong is a staff writer for The Atlantic covering AI. He told us that the IPO could make SpaceX bigger than Meta, Walmart, JP Morgan Chase, and just about any large company that isn't AI. SpaceX is known for its innovation in space travel, which is expensive. But Wong says that's not why Musk is making this move for capital.
He has positioned himself and SpaceX as infrastructure providers for the future of the AI boom because he wants to launch data centers into space.
Wong reports SpaceX and other big AI players have essentially squeezed every dollar they can out of the private investment market. Musk spoke to investors last Thursday about how it will all work.
We don't think this is a particularly difficult thing to do. In fact, we think it's easier than our communication satellites. So Starlink, the V3 communication satellite is an incredibly complex machine. The AI data center would be much simpler by comparison because it's really just solar power plus radiator, some basic equipment for operating the satellite, and then the laser links, which would connect to the Starlink communications constellation and then to the ground.
Musk says the proximity to the sun would address the problems of energy consumption playing out in communities back on Earth. While it might sound like an elegant solution, Wong says it's much easier said than done.
You're sending extremely expensive technology into space that takes talented, skilled human technicians to run, wire together, to repair. So what happens when something breaks? There are a huge amount of technical challenges to be solved.
SpaceX's IPO offering arrives as AI giants Anthropic and OpenAI prepare for their own listings. Wong says all this money flowing isn't without risk. These companies could become too big to fail and create major ripple effects on the wider U.S. economy if it ends up as a bubble ready to burst. And people may find themselves investing in these companies whether they want to or not. Several major indexes are making special exceptions that would allow SpaceX to be included just days after the company goes public. That means millions of Americans with 401ks could soon be automatically purchasing its stock.
They've kind of made AI an inevitability because so much money has been poured into it. And that's also money that could have gone elsewhere, right? If there hadn't been an AI boom and a data center build out like this, that money could have gone to building roads, offices, solar panels, clean energies of the future. Instead, it's all being spent on data centers. So the government could have an interest in stepping in and saying, like, these companies have become too important to our economy, to our national security, as we've seen the White House increasingly discuss over the past couple of months. And so we're going to bail them out should anything go wrong.
America's largest pediatric hospital has reached an agreement to create the first ever detransition clinic in the country for transgender patients.
In other words, undo or counteract some of the procedures that they've undergone, things like hormone treatments, puberty blockers, and surgeries.
That's Washington Post reporter Molly Hennessy Fisk, who told us about this clinic at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston. The clinic is the product of a recent settlement to a probe launched by Republican State Attorney General and Senate candidate Ken Paxton in coordination with the Justice Department. Paxton filed a lawsuit claiming that gender transition care provided by Texas Children's amounted to child abuse under state law, despite being legal at the time. Most major medical groups endorse gender-affirming care as safe, effective, and medically necessary, though some, like the American Medical Association, recently updated their guidance to recommend deferring surgery to adulthood. The Trump administration published its own report last year, suggesting there was a lack of established evidence to justify interventions and pointed to European countries that have either paused or restricted certain treatments.
Texas leadership, the Republican Governor Greg Abbott, Attorney General Ken Paxton, have been waging a battle against medical facilities and providers who treat transgender patients, adults, but especially youth. They've gone after medical records, and Texas officials have used social services, child protective services, to threaten and then to investigate families, parents of transgender kids.
Paxton also accused the hospital of improper billing to the state's Medicaid program, claiming it was trying to conceal its gender transition care. The hospital said last month that it ultimately decided to settle the suit to protect resources from expensive litigation. Under the agreement, Texas Children's will have 90 days from the effective date of the settlement to create the clinic. It will offer free services for 5 years to people who receive transition care before they were 21 years old. According to health research studies, including one published by the American Medical Association Journal in 2024, it's rare for people to regret transitioning after hormone therapy and surgical interventions. The settlement also requires the hospital to pay $10 million to resolve the billing allegations. It cannot provide future gender-affirming care and is required to create a list of potential patients who might want it. Lastly, medical privileges were permanently revoked for five doctors who had previously provided transition care to minors at the hospital.
The doctors that I talked to, they were flummoxed. They didn't really understand why the hospital would create this clinic while firing doctors who had a lot of experience. And it seemed to them more of a political statement than an actual change, because a lot of that care is already provided at the hospital in different forms.
Hennessy Fisk says this settlement in Texas could become a model that officials in other conservative states follow.
We have seen, for instance, the Attorney General in Tennessee go after the medical records of transgender patients. And then you've also got the Trump administration's Justice Department getting involved.
In California, the DOJ launched a criminal investigation into a hospital treating transgender youths after judges refused to release patient medical records. At least six families filed lawsuits in response. And a group of trans New Yorkers has requested that a federal judge block the healthcare system, NYU Langone Health, from sharing their medical information with the administration. The government has said it's acting on behalf of patients as it investigates whether health providers acted illegally while providing transition care to minors. And to a few other stories we're following. The fragile truce in the Middle East was under threat last night after Iran and Israel struck each other with missiles. Iran attacked Israeli territory for the first time since April on Sunday with a barrage that was successfully intercepted by the IDF. Later that evening, Israel targeted Iran with strikes of its own. The attacks were sparked by back-and-forth fighting between Hezbollah and Israel over the weekend. Israel said Hezbollah had attacked its northern territory, leading them to target Hezbollah in Lebanon's capital, Beirut. And Iran said that caused them to strike at Israel last night. Trump told Fox on Sunday that Israel's decision to hit Beirut had not been coordinated with the U.S. and that he was, quote, not happy about it. He later told Axios that he was urging Israel against responding to Iran's attacks. Tonight, the New York Knicks take on the San Antonio Spurs in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. But President Trump's decision to attend the game has caused some tighter security measures. Watch parties outside the stadium are gone, and fans have been told to expect TSA-style screening procedures with no bags allowed inside the venue. A previous ban on outdoor watch parties was lifted ahead of Game 1 of the NBA Finals, but the Knicks' victory over the Spurs in San Antonio during Game 2 led to 17 arrests and unruly celebrations, according to The Athletic. New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani also plans to attend Game 3 and has said security is a priority. And finally, most of us know the adage that money doesn't grow on trees, but in an orchard in England, one couple has come pretty close by growing $90,000 chairs, not by carving or assembling them, but by painstakingly shaping young living trees into chairs. The Washington Post reports that Gavin and Alice Monroe have made a business by creating prototypes of this process, which can take 6 to 12 years per chair, depending on the species and weather. Most of the chairs have been sold as works of art. They've drawn global attention and have been displayed in museums and exhibits in Europe, Asia, and the U.S. Some are usable as furniture, though the couple says they don't have one in their own home because their dog Doris would devour it. You can find all these stories and more, including photos of those stunning tree chairs, in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, stick around for the Apple News original World Cup podcast, After the Whistle. Hosts Rebecca Lowe and Brendan Hunt reunite after 3 years, just ahead of the biggest World Cup in history. In episode one, they discuss how Team USA could make a surprise run in the tournament. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow After the Whistle with Brendan Hunt and Rebecca Lowe to find that episode. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.